Fan Twitter brought to you by South Hills Kia, Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. Text line brought to you by Edgar Snyder and Associates, personal injury law firm, where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. It's Tuesday at 1 o'clock. That must mean Mr. Michael McHenry is on the Sullivan Super Service fan hotline, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. He looks better than us, Paul. Look at the monitor right there. Yep. He's a very healthy man, a former professional athlete.
A happy guy, very happy.
He is a very nice man as well. Welcome, Michael.
Thanks, guys. You guys look great. Don't sell yourself short.
Don't sell ourselves short. Look at us, Paul. Yeah. We look like we should be wheeled away here, taken away, you know, airlifted out of the studio. I'll speak for myself. I look horrible. Anyway, Michael, we were talking to Shelty about not only the Pirates' lack of offense, but league-wide. Jason Stark had a story the other day that we're now, and this has been a trend, we are on a historic pace here for, well, just this. Fewest number of hits in the big leagues in a season since 1968, the year they lowered the mound. So I'll start you with this question. Would you be in favor of moving the pitching rubber back? And if so, by how far? Have we reached that level?
No, and I honestly don't think that would help. You're talking about more movement? Yeah, it would slow down the fastball, but the problem is the movement on the pitches and the analytics. The biggest thing I'm seeing is how many times have we seen a ball? I mean, even last night, there were 6 or 7 line drives right into someone's glove. The predictability and the analytics have really taken this thing to a whole nother level. I don't think moving the mound back would do that much, because then all of a sudden the changeups and the split fingers and all these pitches that move down are going to get better. The fastballs that ride, you're going to have a completely different view of it. I remember Joe Bimel did a little quirky scientific study and threw his changeup and breaking ball, and it broke like 3 or 4 more inches just by moving it back a foot.
Wow.
So I think it would change everything if you moved it back. I think one thing they could look into, guys, is the balls. I don't think the balls have played the same all year long. If you look at the analytics on some of the ball flight, it makes no sense. A ball get hit 105 at a certain angle, it should be a home run every time, and it's getting caught in certain games. So I think the balls have been inconsistent, something that, you know, maybe it's a conspiracy theorist in me, but it's been pretty evident all year.
Well, that's interesting. I don't know that I've heard that one. So you're saying you think that maybe the balls, the inconsistency in the balls, that they're not, I don't know, I guess it'd be hard enough or whatever. I don't know, like they're not made in a way that, like you said, if you hit them at a certain angle with a certain swing velocity, they should go out of the park?
Yes, absolutely. And two, every team now has a humidor, which is pretty new over the last couple of years. So MLB takes over the balls with all the tacky stuff going on, and they added the humidor at every ballpark. I mean, the fact that we at PNC have a humidor comparative to Colorado or Cincinnati makes zero sense. And two, think about the humidity yesterday in Cincinnati. I mean, you're talking about a heat index over 95, and they have a humidor. So, I mean, you're making those balls a lot different than they were just 2 years ago.
Man, you threw me off there with that. With it wouldn't help to move the rubber back, but it makes all the sense in the world what you're saying there. So, what could be some other solutions? You talked about the baseballs. I don't think anything's off the table, by the way, Michael. I mean, we have ghost runners, for God's sakes, and extra innings here. So I think anything could be on the table. How about making outfielders play in a certain area, like have literal circles on the field where they can't move until the ball is hit or until it's pitched or something? Because you're right, and a lot of people mentioned this in Jason Stark's piece on this, was that the predictability with hitters has gotten to the point where it feels like everybody is hitting the ball exactly, you know, into a glove. How many times have the Pirates been robbed of extra bases? It's incredible, but they're not the only ones.
Yeah, it's been remarkable, guys. I think the first thing I would look at is, can we take the technology off the field during the game? Because then you can't make those adjustments. If there is a swing adjustment in game, they can't use all of the iPads, everything else to go back and look at it. They have to actually use real time. They have to actually watch the game. No more of this. And I think that would be one thing that would help. And then I think another thing that could help is make those balls consistent. You know, I don't think we need humidors. Chicks dig the long ball. I think the long ball being in the game is really, really important. Not all fields are built the same. But, yeah, I think those are two things that could really, really help. And I think the technology on the field during the game, if that was gone, even if you took away – I know this is for the fans, but, like, maybe it's a violation if you look back and see how hard you're throwing. I don't know. Like, just do silly stuff to try to get this right.
Why has all of the parks gone to putting balls in the humidors? Like, what is the rationale for that? Like, I agree with you 100%. I didn't even like when they did it in Colorado because I thought, hey, that's one of the charms of Colorado is you go there and, you know, it's a beer league softball game. My thing is, what is the rationale for this?
Honestly, I don't know. I think maybe they just want everything to be kind of level across the board. It seems like that's where they're trying to trend the game in general, all the way up to the salary, and it's not going to work. I mean, baseball is a different sport. Every park is built different. It looks different, and you kind of assemble a team based on that, and then you build a culture around it. And if you can create that unit, you're going to be special. Another thing that I would love to see, guys, we talked about this last time, is let's hit to the situation. Let's bunt some more. Let's see more hit and runs. Maybe they add another guy on the roster, and he's a guy that can just absolutely fly, can come in and out of the game. Just something that creates a little bit more oomph into the game. I think a little bit more excitement, making guys make plays. But, I mean, you've seen it. If you bunt one time, it changes their scouting report. It pulls that third baseman in. So the next time you maybe pull or roll over that ball, it's a hit.
Well, Paul mentioned something earlier, too, in his discussions with people around baseball, that another factor in this, Michael, might be the approach that hitters take, I don't know, from probably the times they're younger these days, where it's more of an all or nothing approach. And might it be wise to reemphasize batting average and have better approaches at the plate? Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, you change the money, you change the game. This is something I say all the time. Where money is from a childhood level, when they use sports all the way up, is exit velocity, launch angle, bat speed. I mean, they're even measuring hand speed, ground force. So if you can change the way people look at it, talk about barrel control, start, you know, implementing some way for these guys to make money when they move a guy over, when they bunt, when they barrel it up and hit a line drive. I mean, you get paid nothing, you know, for those things. You have to really be an OPS guy to get paid nowadays, or be an elite defender, or punch tickets. Those are things that maybe aren't that exciting for fans, because in between that time is usually a big gap. And I hope they start to figure that out. I'd love to see guys start hitting like Arraez does in San Diego. You don't have to have a bunch of them, but if you have three or four in each league, you're watching a batting title fight. You're watching maybe a home run fight. And then all these other guys with silver sluggers, you want to see them hitting 310, 320, not 280, not 270. So, yeah, I hope they do something with that. And it's got to start at a younger level. I mean, I really believe that. And I think if it carries over there and pushes into the big leagues – but it seems like the big leagues are pushing down. You know, whatever happens here is being pushed down into college, in the minor leagues, and everywhere else. So I think at the top's the only way it's going to happen, even though I wish it went from the bottom to the top.
Well, yeah, and I think that's interesting, because while I agree with all of the theories about pitching is better and it's harder to hit, and, you know, guys with velocity, it's not just the velocity on one pitch, it's the velocity on a number of all that stuff. I 100% agree with it. But people, and you're a guy that played, so obviously, I mean, I'm not telling you anything you don't know, but guys that played the game or have played the game or been around the game also, they think that's a big part of the problem as well, is that guys – it's almost all an emphasis on trying to hit basically home runs. And so the emphasis is no longer on batting average. It's strikeouts. You know, it used to be if you struck out 100 times in a season, 100, that was a lot. Now guys strike out 225 and nobody says a word about it. It's all or nothing, as opposed to, you know, learning how to hit the other way, learning how to hit where the pitches are pitched to you, you know, doing the things you have to do that create a higher batting average.
Yeah, think about Brian Reynolds right now and what he's been able to do. 21-game hitting streak. And if you look at his spray chart, it is all over the field. And just the other day, he got an RBI single, cuts it a triple. Ball's about, I don't know, 4 to 6 inches, probably even more than that, off the plate. He flicks it over shortstop's head. That's what we should be thinking about. But that starts with understanding who you are. And Clint Earl used to always say, you have to be a great self-evaluator in this game. A lot of these guys don't get the opportunity to be a self-evaluator. Brian Reynolds is signed to a 7-year deal. He's here. So he can evaluate and say, hey, I'm going to take my hit. I've already gotten paid. He's not chasing anything. His agent doesn't say anything in his ear because he gets his check every, you know, couple weeks. So I think a lot of times it has to do with a lot of circumstances we don't talk about. If you sign guys, you're going to see different animals. You know, even if you sign them early on, they're going to take more chances, more risk, and they're going to pitch deeper into games. They're going to play more games. They're not going to worry about maybe resting in them as much because they're part of the, you know, conversation. When you're not signed, you're not really a part of the conversation. They're kind of puppeteering you the whole way, and you have to be what you have to be to try to get that contract. And that's not talked about enough. It probably should be, but that is a reality.
Michael McHenry on the Sullivan Super Service Fan Hotline. You know him from the Pirate Telecast. Him and Stephen Brault do an unbelievable job of breaking down the game. I always say, Michael, that that's, you know, for analysts, I think, in this town throughout history, whether it's hockey, football, or baseball, the real talent is to take the hidden parts of the game, the sort of hard-to-understand parts of the game, and break it down into digestible pieces for the average fan and do it in an entertaining way. And you guys are unbelievable at that, both of you. So again, I really appreciate what you guys do.
It means the world to us. It's been a blast getting to know Steven and working with him. We call each other the battery. You know, we think about it as we're going out there and we have a game plan and we're just going to adjust accordingly. And with the Buccos, sometimes we have to adjust a lot, but they've been a fun team to watch, and they've given us a lot of opportunities to break some fun things down.
Well, let me ask you to break this one down, because it seems to me that it's almost doing more harm than good for Jack Suwinski to remain up in the majors. It seems to be affecting his defense. What has happened with his swing, and what can be done to change it?
So you guys remember, you know, around mid-August last year, I would say his September, he probably had 18 singles, and most of them were hit the other way. He was hitting lefties well. Well, they had a really cool plan, and it was to kind of change his approach against the lefties, shorten up, really try to keep that front shoulder on the ball and work the other way. He's really good and can be elite at times at hitting the breaking ball elevated in the zone, whether it's from a righty or lefty. But sometimes you get a little quick because of the fastball. So he was staying on that pitch. And then he went in the offseason. I think he took that so far that his swing path actually became too direct in and out of the zone. So it created more swing and miss. But more importantly, it created a really steep angle to the ball. So he's topping the ball a lot. We've seen him hit the ball on the ground an absolute ton. He got a base hit last night like that, hit it straight in the ground. When he first came up, he was ready for the fastball, and he had length through the zone. And that's what created all those, you know, power swings, the home runs. And it's the balance of that. So to your point, yeah, I think it is a disjustice. I think they had a need. They called him up maybe a little too early once again. And it's kind of been the story of his career because he's been good enough. He's a great teammate. He's a great human. So they want him in the clubhouse and they want him to succeed. And he succeeded multiple times when we didn't see it coming. This time it looks like he's really struggling. And yeah, I think if he's a part of your future, you got to think about what do we do here? We got to get this guy at bats. We got to let him fight through this because, I mean, he hit 26 homers last year. It's not like he just sniffed a couple homers. You're talking about 19, 26. He should be a 20 homer run guy every year.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, they've got a lot of these guys. We've been talking about a lot of these young guys, Michael. And, you know, obviously, you again, you played, so you kind of know when you're a young player like that and you're struggling, it can be really difficult to find your confidence again, right? I mean, because the league doesn't slow down and say, okay, well, we're going to wait for you to, you know, figure it out. I mean, the league keeps going at the pace that, you know what, you're either going to sink or swim.
Yeah, there's no question. And if you're in the big leagues, you're trying to survive too sometimes. When you go down the minor leagues and they tell you, hey, this is what you're going to, you know, really focus on, it's almost like you get a breath of fresh air. You can kind of calm down, take that giant MLB monkey off your back, stop chasing hits, and get it right. And I thought they did a great job with sending him down before, gave him about 3 or 4 days off to just play around with the swing. I saw him actually move a little bit better, get ready for that fastball. He had a home run to dead center early on in his AAA stint, and then he got called right back up. So I think giving an opportunity to kind of do what Henry Davis did is something that they're probably mulling over, and we probably will see. He's still young. He still has a lot of options. I think he still has another option going into next year. So, I mean, the thing is, we want this guy to be the guy he can be because he could really help our team.
How much did the hitting coach help you when you played? Would you seek outside help? You know, we saw Key Brian Hayes go to Nunnally, the coach in the minors last year, that the Pirates didn't seem to love. When you were a player, was it a case of, if I don't trust the hitting coach here, I'm going to get my own help? But the more general question, Michael, is how much does the hitting coach, how important is that to what you're doing?
So the hitting coach and the hitting team has way too much on their plate. And I would say the pitching side does as well. There's too many guys to kind of oversee. The best teams coach themselves. And what I mean by that, the hitting coach facilitates. He reminds you of certain things you said, whether they kept a notebook. Chili Davis, one of my favorite dudes on the planet hitting-wise, he actually, you know, had notes of my routine. So when I wasn't going well, he came to me and said, hey, remember this time you felt like this? You did this drill. Let's go back to that. And he actually did some of the drills when I wasn't there by himself. He would hit off the machine and feel some of the things to say, okay. So I've carried that over into the way I teach. I went and hit yesterday, actually, just to feel some things and understand it better. But I think the biggest thing is the hitting coach facilitates. The players have to coach themselves and they have to buy in. And that buy-in may be into the philosophy of the hitting coach, but it's not until that hitter really says, I need it at the big league level, the hitting coach even has a door to open. Because, yeah, you go for 6 months home and you're hitting with some guru that you're actually paying. And the fact that you're paying him, he's already smarter, right? He's the smartest man in the room because you're paying him. You don't have to pay these hitting coaches or anybody else in the organization. They're already there. So do they have my best interests? Is it their agenda? You're always fiddling in your mind as a player, thinking through. So once you gain that trust, and, you know, I feel like there's a lot of guys over there that trust that hitting staff, because it is a staff, it's not one person. But yeah, it's really all about the players. Like, you know, I know a lot of guys go to Kutch and talk about swings. Kutch loves breaking down swings, not necessarily his own, because a lot of us don't, but he loves looking at swings and talking about hitting. And it's really trying to figure out, how can I be my best coach with my boys around me?
Well, I think that's an interesting thing. That's an interesting concept, because I think, you know, the there is a little bit of a misconception, I think, as just to how much a hitting coach or hitting instructor really makes a difference. That being said, Michael, I mean, the buck has to stop somewhere. And yeah, I mean, is there are there ways to evaluate whether or not these guys are doing a good job or not?
Yeah, no question. I mean, I think you have to put a bunch of things into a basket and see if they're doing a good job. And it's the most common coach to get fired in the major leagues. I mean, their lifespan is usually about 2 years. So there's a huge turnover. It's not like anybody's really figuring it out. And a lot of it has to do with circumstance. Are guys playing at the right times? Are they being set up for the right situations? Who are we facing consistently? You know, what is the injuries? There's a lot of things that go into it. And then, you know, what is the turnaround of, like, good to bad? You know, how are guys making adjustments? Is it seem like it is the same old, or are they chasing something? Maybe it's a philosophy. There's a lot of question marks. Those have to be answered. And that's one thing I always say is, like, transparency wins. If you can be as transparent as possible, I think it's always going to give you an advantage to let the fans and everyone else know exactly what you're trying to do. It's just really hard in this game to get transparency sometimes.
Paul, may I engage Michael in a game of free association?
Absolutely. Ooh.
You ready, Michael?
I am.
This is tailored in a certain way today, which is very exciting for everybody. If you were the manager, or a manager, let's say, you could see Holderman as a closer. He would thrive there at some point.
Yes.
If you were a GM, you would think about having Piguero up here.
Yes.
You'd think about having Gorski up here.
Yes.
You'd think about having Palacios up here very soon.
I'd have to pick one of the two of those guys. Actually, I probably would pick Palacios over Gorski because he's a fire starter. I think he brought an element to that team last year that you can't really explain. I think that's why they signed him. They felt that. I mean, he was a different breed, that Jay Hay feel. Yeah, I think he's needed. So I'm going to go Palacios.
If you were a palm reader, you would see Henry Davis as this kind of big league hitter, power hitter, average hitter, doubles hitter, or just maybe a guy who doesn't make it as a big league hitter. What do you see?
A hybrid. I think he's going to be a guy that figures out how to be an honest self-evaluator. I think he was going in that direction before he got hit in the head. So I think we're going to see the best version of Henry Davis moving forward.
If you were a major league hitting instructor, you would tell Key Brian Hayes to go back to that toe tap that helped him last year.
Not necessarily. I would make sure he's healthy, and it looks like he is. But yeah, I think that's a version of him that we will see at some point. That's all about comfort.
If you were a GM anywhere, you might think about trading for Josh Bell.
No.
You might think about trading for Luis Robert.
Yes.
If you were commissioner of baseball, Paul Skeens would start for the National League in the All-Star game.
No, but he would be there.
Thank you, Michael. I have no further questions.
That was a good one. I like that one.
You were great, man. You always are. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Yeah, anytime. Take care, guys.
That's Michael McHenry.
I always find it interesting, like when we talk to guys just that have played in the majors, just about baseball.
Man, it's so smart.
It makes it such a different game than every other sport, really.
It really does.
I mean, there's so many things to consider.
How about him saying that moving the mound back or the pitching rubber back wouldn't help?
I didn't think about all that.
Because the breaking balls would be even more devastating.
I didn't even think about all that.
Me neither. Now I don't think they should. Glad I didn't write that column, City Limits.
And somebody else said, where's it at? 4 more feet between the mound and home plate with a 99-mile-an-hour pitch would only give a hitter 0.02755 seconds extra to react.
I don't know if that's a lot or a little.
I know. I have no idea what that means.
That's a lot in terms of overall time that you need to adjust to knowing what could be a ball and a strike. It's a lot, but the movement is incredible.
How does he know, Paul? He just jumped in with that definitive statement from out of nowhere. We haven't heard from him in 2 hours, City Limits.
A lot of guests to come on. I mean, I'll ask questions
There's a little ecosystem that goes on behind the glass there with you and IT.
That's right.
Where is IT?
Hopefully we're not developing any bacteria back here. He is podcasting.
Is he?
Yeah, not creating his own, but putting our podcasts up.
You know, one of the things that's interesting, I've been seeing a lot of these videos of the Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
Guys are in the beach, at the beach, in the water with it, whatever. Say there was 20,000 fans. I don't know what the building holds where the Panthers play, Florida Panthers. Say, I don't know. Let's say it's like the arena. Let's say it's 19,000 is what the capacity is, right?
Yeah.
I'd be willing to bet there's 25,000 people that actually care about this. The Florida Panthers in Miami. Just 19,000 of them all happen to buy tickets. Because
you might be right. I don't know.
If you were walking around Miami today, it wouldn't be like, you know, if the Heat had just won. You know what I'm saying? It's just like that's one of those franchises. Like if had Edmonton won, we'd be seeing videos of like basically the whole area up there and that whole province. You know what I mean? They'd all be losing their minds. But, like, there's one where my man's walking right down the street with the Stanley Cup, and people are just driving past.
Why does that guy have a big silver cup in his
hand? Yeah, like, nobody even cares. It's like there's certain franchises in certain areas, right, where the only people that care all seem to go to the games. You know, like, I don't imagine the television ratings are great for the Florida Panthers locally like they are here for the Penguins. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. By the way, when I look over there, you know how I'm looking over at you a lot? I'm looking into the camera. You're thinking I'm looking, trying to give you a signal.
Yeah,
I'm like, I feel like I need to look into the camera because I look over at the monitor and I'm never looking at the person. So don't take me looking at you that I want something from you.
Well, I was wondering, I always wonder, like, do you need me to say something?
No, I'm looking into the camera, nodding, being polite, things like that.
Mine is like right here.
Yeah, yours is perfectly placed.
I would be staring into like
the abyss.
Nelly over
Nelly.
Here.
Yeah, Nelly out at Nelly the out at the front desk.
At the front desk is what I would be staring at.
Listen, I'm ashamed of what I said yesterday that I thought Connor McDavid should win the Conn Smythe no matter what. I shouldn't have said that. I thought the guy spilled his guts onto the ice, but he didn't do anything in game six. And if you're going to win the Conn Smythe, you got to finish the job. He didn't have a point in game six or seven. He shouldn't have won it, Paul.
I have a hard time saying game six when they scored five goals. So, I mean, it's not like they didn't score any goals in game six. It's not like they were up 3-2 and got shut out in game six and game seven. They scored
okay,
five
then seven,
goals in
but,
game
but
six.
They didn't win. You got to finish the job.
Again, the Florida Panthers did everything in their power to take him out of the game, which we've seen happen with Sid. We've seen happen with all of the best players. It happens. I had no problem with him winning it. In fact, I would be willing to argue that most of the people that really had a problem with it have 412 or 724 area code.
No, I think there's something to be said for finishing the job. Like, if he had played a really good game seven.
I thought the game was terrible. I thought they mucked it up completely.
They did.
And they did everything in their power.
He's got to find a way to get on the score sheet in game seven or six.
They basically said, we're not going to let him beat us.
Well, every team says that about a star, and they do it anyway.
I'm just saying, but they have the players to do it.
Ace, what do you think? Should he still have won it?
Oh, I was very adamant about this last night, that he should not have won it. I don't think that if you don't win the championship, you should not win the award. And I know it's different than other sports where it's the entire Stanley Cup playoffs. But he was invisible.
But what if he had been great in game seven and had set the record, the all-time record for points in a playoffs? Then do you give it to him? You said no. You said you have to win.
I think you have to win.
What do you think of Ace's opinion?
I think it's nonsense. I think if you're the most valuable player, it's a 25 game award.
But you didn't win it.
But you got to finish it.
You have to finish the job.
Again, it's hockey. If it was the NBA, I would agree with you completely. If it was the NBA and you're LeBron James and it's game seven and you score 4 points you score like 9 points and you go 3 for 21 from the field, that's different.
What do you think of Paul's point there, Ace?
Hockey, there's so many factors, right? I mean, I got a kick out of the guy who was like, well, Sidney Crosby would never go two games without scoring a point in the playoffs when his team needed him. Really? Did you watch the Islanders series 2 years ago when they lost? And in four of the six games, he didn't score. And he had a total of one assist.
I got a better point for you. He didn't get a point in game six or seven in 2009, and they won the cup.
But that's my point. There's so many other factors. So,
and he still deserved the award. Well, they won.
I think.
Did he win the award that year?
I think in the Stanley Cup.
Malkin won it in 2009.
Crosby won 16 and 17.
Yeah, you're right.
I think in the Stanley Cup playoffs, it's an award for the entire Stanley Cup playoffs. Now, if I were the people running hockey, I would come up with an NBA or a Stanley Cup final MVP. That'd be different. But as long as it's an award for the entire playoffs, I mean, this guy willed them to basically an inch away from winning a cup. I can't say that he deserved the
least most valuable player, the anti Conn Smythe, was Draisaitl.
Right.
No points.
Oh my God.
Right. And you got a bunch of guys like that. That's what I'm saying.
Did McDavid have to come up and accept this thing from Bettman? I didn't see it.
He did not.
He did not come out.
He didn't?
No, that's why.
That would have been horrifying if he did.
Gary Bettman was shaking as he was announcing the award. He was saying
And they cut away from it when it was clear that he wasn't coming back out to get it.
Also, great shot by ESPN when the Panthers lifted the cup right away. Did not even have the original lifting of the cup in the audio. Do you see that, Joe? Did you watch the ceremony?
What?
Yeah.
What'd you say?
When the cup was received by the Florida Panthers.
Yeah.
ESPN cut the audio and also did not quickly cut away to a different camera shot to show like the first hoist of the cup.
You got to have the swearing in there. NBC did.
Always.
That's part of it. And then you apologize later. It's easier to beg for forgiveness than ask for permission.
Can I say this?
Who cares?
ABC's post-game coverage was, what's that word you used before? Hideous. Absolutely hideous.
It was bad.
An embarrassment how bad it was.
Makes you miss Doc Emmerich more and more.
I mean, they didn't. Their camera angles were bad. They didn't get. I mean, they cut away from everything that they needed to show. It was ridiculous.
Have you seen Livy Dunn and Skeens boating around in Pittsburgh?
Oh yes,
this is unbelievable. Yeah. Has anybody seen her around town limits? Any of your friends and stuff?
No, we've not seen. Well, one of my friends did see her at the game a couple weeks ago.
Here she is.
She was
fishing.
Walking around the concourse.
She's fishing in the Allegheny.
With Paul Skeens and I think Jared Jones was also there. Do you see somebody stole a boat from a marina? They wanted to go meet some Pittsburgh Pirates. Is that what you think this guy that stole the boat was doing? He wanted to go bring this boat over and wave to Paul Skeens and Livy Dunn and fish with them? And Jared Jones? Is that what this guy was doing?
What are you catching? Does anything live in that river?
In the Allegheny?
Yeah, what are you catching there?
Some type of fish?
What?
There has to be some type of fish.
Aren't they poisoned already? No, nothing lives in. Would you jump in that water? I wouldn't.
No.
Paul, would you?
Not now, but I'll be honest, in the old days. I mean, there were times when I would jump in, certainly not the water down around the point, absolutely not. But I mean, I've like swum in the Allegheny up north, you know what I mean? I've swum in the Monongahela down south, you know, in certain places. But you're right, you're absolutely right.
I can't believe there's fish Do they have like four heads?
What are they? are they carp?
Carp fish.
Aren't there carps?
Are there any trouts in that fish?
What kind of fish that I can delineate fish types?
I think there's
types?
Trouts. I think there's carps.
Trouts.
My trout slipping in the water.
I think there's, what do they call it, bash or bass?
Bass.
And I think there's, what are the ones that have the whiskers?
Catfish.
Catfish hunter.
I think there are catfish in the waters as well.
Do they shave, Falsey? Catfish?
The fish?
Yeah. I would not want to pick out any fish from the Allegheny. I mean, and I am astounded that anything lives in those waters.
Do you think the fish taste good in those waters?
No, I don't.
That's the biggest thing.
I could be wrong.
It's kind of nasty. Like, if you think about it, the water that's down there around the point, if you look in it, you're like, there's no chance I'm jumping in that, number one. And number two, I'm not eating anything that comes out of that.
How about this? Bobrovsky wasn't even close. McDavid got 83 points for the Conn Smythe. Barkov got 46. Gustav Forsling got 8. And Bobrovsky only got 7 points.
You know who played really unbelievable the entire series? Is your guy Evan Rodriguez.
Oh, yeah, was he good? What's Cooking brought to you by your local Geico rep, Tim Hester.
Thank you, Mr. Hester.
Very kindly. Fan weather brought to you by Sun Chevy 24 Silverado LT Crew Cab, up to $7,500 in rebates. Full terms and qualifications at sunchevy.com. High of 87 today with sunny skies. All right, let's wrap this thing up. Do we have some techs in the city here?
There are a couple fish ones. So the 2005 Bassmaster Classic, which is the masters of bass fishing, took place in the Three Rivers, and it was one of the most difficult tournaments ever, according to Texter Juice.
That's very interesting. What's his point? That there are fish in the Allegheny?
Yes, somebody said that there are plenty of fish in the rivers. The two most prominent are the Allegheny brown trout and the Monongahela whitefish.
Yeah, I bet the trout are brown when you pick them up out of that river.
The Monongahela whitefish? I don't know.
Can you turn his mic on?
What is a whitefish?
A whitefish?
I don't know.
Monongahela whitefish. What is it?
I don't know. I've
never
heard of
it. Is it edible?
And Jason in Slippery Rock said the Allegheny is known for excellent bass fishing.
In Slippery Rock? Yeah, that's different than downtown.
No, he's from Slippery Rock, the texter.
Who is? Wait a second. I don't see. So there are people fishing off the banks of the Allegheny downtown?
Possibly.
Somebody else picked on Paul for saying that the plural of trout is trouts.
That's correct.
Paul, you were called out on that.
You were called out, Paul.
It's like deer. It's if you trout. Have 100 deer, you don't have 100 deers. You said trout were trouts.
Or goose and geese.
No, that's not similar.
No, it's
all
not.
All right, well, thank I mean, you. Again, what about, wait.
You're not multiple
so
geese.
Hold up. So the plural of trout is what?
Trout. like deer.
Really?
Yeah.
Not trouts?
No.
So what about bass? Is it basses?
No.
Or is it bass?
Basses? No.
So all
bass.
Fish?
No, wait. So,
wait. So when we talk about fish,
yeah.
The plural is just the same as
not necessarily. Like, well,
like
yeah,
catfish.
Like, wait a second. Yeah. Salmon's so, the same thing.
We have about, to go. Ponies
is there
gonna
any
get
type
mad.
Of fish?
Ponies
are going to be mad.
Hold on,
wait,
hold
is there, are there fish where
seconds.
The plural is a plural with an S?
Ponies getting very angry.
Catfishes.
We have to go.
Catfishes.
Shrimps. No, it's shrimp.
It's just shrimp, not
oh,
shrimps.
My God. All of seafood, there's no plural. You just keep it the same.
Octopuses.
Thank you.
Sharks.
No, that's octopi. Sharks for sure.
Sharks. Turtles.
Oh.
Thank you, Limit.
Yeah.
Now we gotta go.
All right.
Goodbye.